Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. Today is Sunday, October 11th, 2015, just after 10:30 p.m. here in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 50th episode of the show. In this episode, I'm going to be talking with astrologer Patrick Watson about 10 problems that are unique to astrologers, some of which represent real issues regarding the perception of astrology in modern society, and others that are just humorous annoyances that astrology enthusiasts have to deal with from time to time. This is based on an article that Patrick wrote on his website at patrickwatsonastrologer.com. For more information about subscribing to the podcast, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. This podcast is made possible by listeners of the show who pledge their support through Patreon. If you enjoy the show and you'd like to support the production of future episodes, then please consider donating a dollar or more through Patreon, and in return you'll get access to some great subscriber benefits, such as access to a private discussion forum, early access to new episodes, and more. So let's get started with the episode by welcoming my guest. Hi, Patrick. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So the genesis of this episode is that you published an article on your website recently that I think struck a chord with a lot of people in the astrological community. It was titled Top 10 Problems Astrologers Have That Are Just the Worst. And this article got like a ridiculous amount of shares and likes on Facebook. And I think part of the reason is just that it addressed or kind of raised in a humorous manner some issues that are sort of core issues that lots of astrologers share in terms of either things that are unique that we experience as a result of either this profession or this practice that we engage in, or things that we experience just in terms of the perception of astrology in society. So I thought we could spend an episode talking about that article and talking about some of the points that you raised in it and just kind of expanding on some of those points in order to get more of what you were really going for there.
I'll be happy to do that.
What led you to write the article, or what, where did it come from, or what was some of your motivation in doing it?
It was just sort of a culmination of a lot of thoughts that I've had about astrology for a while, and I was kind of inspired by, you know, these BuzzFeed listicles and Cracked articles, and I've always thought it'd be cool if Cracked magazine did an article with an astrologer, because I think there are so many kinds of peculiar issues. I have so many strange. Compared to my so-called muggle friends, there's a lot of weird issues I have. You know, I'm fretting about birth times and things like that. And people, you know, it's hard to explain to someone who doesn't really understand why this would be important to someone. So I just thought it was kind of a funny, they're funny and strange and unique problems that astrologers have. I just thought people would like to read about it.
Sure.
It wasn't really a
deep, like, research.
Derp.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about some of the points maybe.
Sure.
All right. So yeah, let's start from the top maybe in terms of your first sort of point of annoyance in terms of astrology.
Yeah. Well, basically one thing that has always grabbed my goat, something that's always acquired my goat is this misuse of terminology. I'd sometimes when I'd see people using the word conjuncting or conjuncted, like using conjunct as a verb instead of a, is conjoining is the verb to conjoin, and the state of being conjunct to different things. So that always really annoyed me. And then of course, you know, being called an astrologist as opposed to an astrologer, you know, you always know the level of understanding that someone has when they are talking to you, especially if they're critiquing you, if they refer to you as an astrologist and they don't even have the requisite courtesy of referring to you in the way that you prefer to be referred to as, you know,
sure.
Astrologer. So,
and that comes up pretty frequently with skeptics, but also sometimes with either very new astrologers that are usually possibly putting themselves out there sooner than they should be, mm-hmm. Sometimes, or just sometimes people that are like, that don't know much about astrology, but that are trying to pretend that they do. Sometimes you'll see it from there as well. Although somebody did point out to me once that I had to be careful about that sort of accusation, because, every once in a while you will see like a reputable astrologer that just likes to call themselves astrologist just to mess with other astrologers or set themselves apart. Robert Zoller, for example, somebody pointed out that he had the term astrologist on his business cards. So nonetheless, I'd say that's probably like 1% of the people.
Right. It's pretty uncommon. And then I also feel like in a lot of astrological writing, there's kind of an over-reliance on certain terms like energy. And in fact, the whole language always gives you away. Sometimes the way people talk about astrology, it kind of betrays a kind of a causal framework for how it works, because sometimes you'll see people do it. And even I catch myself doing it sometimes, like where you're talking about a planet influencing things or a planet's effects. And what we're really talking about in general, as long as you are holding, if you're not subscribing to a causal framework of astrology, is that you're talking about correlations rather than effects or influences. So I've tended to feel that some astrological writings tends to have an over-reliance on these sort of buzz terms or buzz phrases like energy or consciousness. And I'm not saying like you can never use these words or something, and I certainly don't want to be seen as like passing a judgment on, you know, what people want to write about or how they want to express themselves in writing about astrology, but still.
Sure, there's certain phrases that perhaps get used too much or get imported from other, let's say, fields, like from just the New Age sort of community in general, or from other words that just get used as sort of buzz phrases, like you said, I think.
Yes. So terminology, I mean, it's kind of a minor grievance. I mean, I can live with being called an astrologist, I suppose.
That is one of the things that will make like an astrologer's eye like twitch.
Right. Or like in the article, I said every time you say conjuncting, a kitten's alka curtain expires, you know, a kitten dies.
Right. During the ancient length of life technique for kittens.
Indeed. Yeah. Pet astrology, but like hardcore. Yeah, that's just sort of a minor grievance. I don't know if everyone necessarily feels that way, but maybe people felt it seems like I got a lot of comments saying like that they became kind of self-conscious after reading that. You know, because
right.
They realized how many times they might have they sort of forced people to kind of look at their own writing and think, oh dear, have I used, you know, this kind of language before?
Yeah, and I think that's okay, though. I mean, that's part of the process, and that's what's funny about it, this idea of that being like the very first thing at the top of your list, the misuse and abuse of astrological terminology, because just about every astrologer has had some term at some point in time that they've kind of screwed up like that. I remember calling the asteroid Chiron for like 2 or 3 years before I walked into an astrology shop and said it, and the astrologer like immediately sort of winced when I said it like that and corrected me.
Well,
and called it Chiron for anybody that's not familiar.
I've also struggled with the correct pronunciation of the planet in between Saturn and Neptune.
Yeah. Right.
is that, I mean, I think both are acceptable, right?
I mean, it's really, yeah, it's a matter of personal choice. I think a lot of people go out of their way to pronounce it differently just for the sake of not running into that issue.
Uranus versus right. Uranus. But yeah, so that's something that's always kind of peeved. It's been just kind of a pet peeve, astrological terminology misuse and abuse. And, you know, I kind of feel like by leveling these kinds of charges that I put myself open to that same scrutiny. So I guess one thing I just want to say for anyone who feels a little self-conscious about any of these things, I mean, at least these kinds of issues are being brought up by someone who isn't hostile to astrology. You know, better me than, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's a dual thing. On the one hand, it's like the misuse or not understanding of certain things. But on the other hand, it's kind of like a blasé use of loaded terms like energy or consciousness or what have you, which
empowering.
Is almost like a... Right.
Mercury is retrograde, not in... It isn't in retrograde. That's just kind of a superfluous word that doesn't have to be there.
Sure.
Anyway, so yeah, that's that.
All right. Well, that's a good starting point. So number 9 on your list is Lame Critiques of Astrology, which is the next sort of favorite thing that all astrologers have to sort of put up with and learn how to deal with at some point in their studies of astrology or their career as an astrologer.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, there are, I think that skepticism has a role to play. I think that to improve our understanding of the world and of our craft, that we should be open to critical arguments. But I do think that not all critical or skeptical arguments are necessarily of equal merit. They aren't always valid. And I guess that's just what pees me off, is that there are more sensible arguments the skeptics could bring up, but they just keep bringing up the same old ones. And they don't even, I mean, they really could level better arguments against astrology if they just took a little more time to actually understand it. But instead, we just get the same old, same old.
Right. So you get, this is one of my favorite jokes in the article, the Ophiuchus truthers.
Is that how you say it? I thought it was a Ophiuchus.
I don't know. That's a good one. We've just like stumbled upon one of our own pronunciation disputes. So I'm sure we'll hear from the audience.
Let us know.
There'll be like a sect from each pronunciation thing.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. So what was your favorite joke? Sorry, I just had to hear it.
Just the idea that conflating that with the truthers, or the idea that's come up of like the 9/11 conspiracy theorists.
Right.
who have and promote very sometimes vigorously like different conspiracy theories about the September 11th terrorist attacks. And yeah, that they're obvious, often very vocal about it and very sometimes aggressive about it. And you do see a similar kind of enthusiasm sometimes in terms of this, some of the notions about the 13th sign and about things related to that and how the zodiac has changed, and like people sometimes really take it upon themselves to spread the gospel of that in some sense.
Right. To me, it's just so stupid, because, I mean, if they just didn't conflate the constellational zodiac with the tropical and sidereal zodiacs, they wouldn't be making all this hullabaloo. Like, it comes from a very basic gap in just basic like terms and basic definitions.
Some of that's almost like our fault in the sense of it's kind of one of those things that almost leads back to the terminology issues, where sometimes it's not usually astrologers, because astrologers don't usually get caught up in this, but sometimes you'll see like the use of things like star signs as a term to refer to zodiacal signs, and that, you know, then leads back to the assumption about the Western astrologers using the sidereal zodiac or using the constellations.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And there is the other downside, which is that they all do have the same names. So, I mean, that's fair.
Right. The tropical zodiacal names for the signs are the same as the sidereal names for the signs.
Well, and they're named after the constellations they used to align with. I mean, perhaps, I guess the solution to that may be new names, or it's kind of a difficult question. There's a lot of thoughts I'm sure people have about that. But yeah, I guess it's hard to blame the Ophiuchus or Ophiuchus truthers, but it just annoys me that the argument just comes from conflating everything with everything. And there are three separate things they need to know. And if they did, then this wouldn't be a thing. So
one last point about that is it's been interesting. I've seen some kind of what I perceive or what it seems to be almost like opportunists that have been taking advantage of that whole confusion that came up a few years ago in 2011 with the whole procession and Ophiuchus controversy. And there's been like a couple of opportunists that have taken it upon themselves to sort of like ride that wave of confusion by trying to introduce like a new form of astrology, so that there's some people out there that are saying we need to do 13 sign astrology now that includes Ophiuchus as a sign. And so the first time I've ever seen this was somebody approached me with a chart the other day that had Ophiuchus in it, and it was from this specific guy who's trying to like make a name for himself in doing a 13 sign astrology. So I thought that was interesting, and I was wondering if that was going to become more of an issue and more of an unexpected sort of side issue, where the skeptics were originally, and astronomers were using that to dispute astrology and to dismiss it. And the whole point of that whole controversy was to cast doubt onto the validity of astrology. But one of the interesting weird sort of side effects is now there's like a few people that are like, you know, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do that type of
truthers.
Right. exactly.
Oh gosh. I had not heard about that. Well, maybe they should talk to, you know, the sidereolists, since they use the nakshatras, and that's I believe that's a 13-fold division of the sky, right? The lunar mansions. Oh.
Well, it's 27 or 28.
Oh, whoops. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I belong somewhere on this list now.
close enough.
All right.
So the Ophiuchus truthers, that's tied in with the next one that you list under the lame critiques of astrology, which is the procession preachers.
Yeah.
Tell us about the procession preachers.
Basically, procession preachers are people who think that astrologers don't understand precession. They think that because the vernal equinox, well, all of the solstices and equinoxes have shifted backward through the zodiac, that, you know, you're no longer, the sun is no longer rising in the constellation that was originally rising in. So they think that astrologers don't know this. The basic thing that they should know, that so that they wouldn't have to be getting their panties in a twist about this, is that astrologers are aware of this, and that astrologers are deliberately using the tropical zodiac, that then, or at least astrologers in the West, for the most part, tropical astrologers are deliberately doing that. It's not out of ignorance. It's out of deliberate.
Right. One of the things I pointed out during my recent episode with Sam Reynolds, when we discussed this, was that I've actually been able to trace this back. And the first time somebody that was critical of astrology used that argument about precession was actually all the way back in the 3rd century. An old Christian church father actually used it as an argument against astrology. So literally, skeptics have literally been using this argument for most, that astrologers aren't aware of precession, for almost 2,000 years now, oftentimes completely oblivious to the fact that astrologers are aware of it, that you have famous astronomers like, you know, Galileo or Kepler or Ptolemy, that were like deliberately using the tropical zodiac and very much aware of what precession was and what its implications were, and very deliberate about what reference system they were using. And yet this argument still persists.
Wow. So precession preachers are not new.
Yeah. It's not a new gospel that they're preaching. And it's also not a very accurate one, but it's one of those ones that sort of appeals to, again, the public's perception, going back to perception issues that astrology has with the public, where the public might easily make that assumption that it's based on the constellations.
And that's because they use the same names. I mean, I feel like that's kind of that seems to be an issue. the fact that we use the same names for the constellations and the tropical signs, that maybe is the point of confusion. I mean,
sure. Was it you that suggested at one point in the past you actually came up with some different names or something for it, or was that somebody else?
If I did, I don't think I could repeat them. I don't remember them, but they're probably the products of a 17-year-old mind, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'll attribute that to you then, regardless, that at some point you did come up with a brilliant new list of names for the signs of the zodiac, and at some point hopefully we'll recover that. So next, and this is actually connected, I wanted to skip to the next one because this is actually related, which is the other point you made, is the heliocentric town criers, which are people that don't understand that. Well, it's actually kind of complicated. I mean, what was your main point with this one?
Heliocentric town criers are people who claim that astrologers don't understand that the solar system is heliocentric because charts are cast from the geocentric perspective. So,
right.
They think that astrologers aren't aware that the solar system is heliocentric. Astrologers have known this since antiquity. I couldn't give you the date, but this is something astrologers have known for a very, very long time. And the whole point of casting charts from the geocentric perspective is because that's where we are. You know, I suppose if you are floating above the sun and you were born, that's when you would cast a heliocentric chart. It's stupid because it comes from just a basic ignorance of what astrologers do or don't know. And I think the weirder thing is that a much more effective argument against astrology would be to ask how you would cast a chart for someone who wasn't born on Earth. But instead, the focus is just on just trying to cast astrologers as people who think that the Earth is the center of our solar system.
Right, just because we're using the planet that we're using as the reference point for the calculations, because that's where we live, because we happen to be using that as the reference point for our chart calculations, the assumption then that astrologers don't realize that the sun is the center of the solar system.
And I call them town criers because, you know, that they think they are letting everyone know the news. They think it's news. They think it's – they're like the truthers, you know. They are you know, making a big deal out of something that isn't a big deal.
Sure. And that is tied in with your next point, which is the horoscope know-it-alls.
Yeah, horoscope know-it-alls are just people who think that they know – they think that they understand all of astrology. Their one reference for astrology are horoscopes, sun sign horoscopes, and that is all astrology is. So this is an ignorance of another level, which is that they don't even know anything else that astrologers do aside from, you know, writing sun sign horoscopes. And the silly thing about it really is that, I mean, astrologers will readily tell you and agree that, like, generally, you know, a sun sign horoscope is not going to be the best way to communicate, you know, anything detailed and meaningful. You know, it's a commercial invention. It's not astrologers' preference necessarily that these are the most popular ways in which astrology is consumed or experienced by the public.
Sure. So they're know-it-alls because they know, they feel as if they know enough and they don't need to know anything else beyond that. And that sort of rounds out this list of what you referred to as armchair skeptics.
yeah, armchair skeptics. Right. It's sort of a, you know, there's the phrase armchair philosophers, people who don't actually have to deeply engage with the subject that they want to be, you know, deeply involved with. So I feel that, yeah, making these kinds of assumptions and having basic ignorance about the subject they're talking about makes them an armchair skeptic.
Brilliant. Yeah, because, I mean, that's one of the biggest shortcomings, at least as far as I've seen, and in following the modern skeptical community, is the surprising lack of depth or familiarity that most skeptics have with the subjects that they are skeptical about, because skepticism has become like this thing or this like ideology that you subscribe to and you follow, you know, certain leaders within that field, and you sort of take their opinions for granted without looking into the subjects themselves more than just in passing or more than just some sort of superficial at some superficial level. And that's where most of these criticisms come from, is what are some of the most superficial, not actually valid but seemingly valid criticisms that you could make about astrology that would appeal not to anyone who knows anything about it, but to people that don't know much about it and just have certain assumptions about it based on their what the public perception of astrology is. And you basically end up with this list of these four primary criticisms.
And they could do better. They could do a lot better. I mean, I think it would be I mean, there are some questions which I think astrologers should be trying to work on and resolve themselves, you know, before they're ever asked by a skeptic who manages to learn enough about the subject to really ask a more complicating type of question. For example, whether or if the sidereal zodiac or the tropical zodiac is better at reflecting empirical realities. I mean, that I think there's a lot of there's a lot of ways in which the differences between the sidereal and tropical zodiac could cause interpretive differences. And if astrology is supposed to represent the world as it is, then it seems like there would be a conflict there. And so I think that's something that eventually astrologers will have to kind of reconcile with or figure out, like if the sidereal or tropical zodiac represent a different way of looking at the world, and that each one is equally valid in some way, or if one actually is better at depicting reality. And I'm loath to say that, because I know there's a rich tradition in India and millions of people who have no problem with the sidereal zodiac, but it's something that we should be more prepared for, maybe, when skeptics learn more about astrology and wonder about that.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, astrologers, I'm sure, will have to deal with a more robust and incisive or legitimate critiques of astrology from the skeptical community. But that day is not today.
That day is far away.
That day is not anywhere on the horizon so far. Yeah, so one of the issues, just from my perspective, also that astrologers have to deal with, which is a major conceptual issue, is an easy question of to tropical astrologers, which is if your astrology is based on seasons and if your rulership scheme is somehow derived from or based on seasons, does that mean that the tropical zodiac should be flipped in the southern hemisphere? And if not, then what is the basis for using the vernal point as the starting point for the zodiac that's true in both hemispheres?
Right.
And that's kind of a conceptual issue I was talking to Austin Kopic about recently, and we were talking about doing a show on the zodiac, the different zodiac issues, and maybe raising that point and expanding upon it a little bit. So we'll save that maybe for another show.
All right.
All right. So what's the next point? So that's actually just point nine in terms of lame critiques of astrology. But moving on to point eight, what was point eight?
Potential clients don't Google for astrologers. I think it might have been you, Chris. You introduced me to Google Trends, and if you type in a search term on Google Trends, it'll tell you how often it's searched for on Google, and that can be a reflection of general interest in a given topic. So, you know, if something really big is happening, say Shia LaBeouf getting arrested, you know, then you type in Shia LaBeouf and you probably see a spike, you know, at the time that news reports came out about him being arrested. So and the cool thing about Google Trends is you can also compare search terms. So you can judge how often something is searched versus other searches. And so I put in a few astrology related terms, such as a horoscope, an astrologer, an astrology and natal chart and readings. And I've also done it with tons of other combinations as well, and even searching each individual sign to see if, like, there's a particular sign which searches for their horoscope more. And I do have an interesting answer on that, which you might be able to guess, but I will withhold that for just a second. but my basically my finding is that horoscope is searched for far more than any other astrology-related term. And I think this is kind of a problem for astrologers, because it reflects a perception issue, or basically means that clients are not searching for astrologers with the terms that astrologers are using to describe themselves or their services. I mean, unless someone is actually publishing a horoscope. So, you know, when people when astrologers are selling their services, say relationship chart analysis or natal chart analysis or horaries or electionals or whatever, you know, the only the only people who know those terms are people who are already familiar with the subject, and it's going to be difficult to sell your wares over the internet if the people who are interested in astrology and actually are looking for astrological insight don't know a way to find you.
Right. They're sort of searching for the wrong thing, or maybe not the wrong thing, but they're searching for a certain type of that, which is the more consumer not driven, but the thing that's being marketed more to consumers and more like mass market forms of astrology, like searching for horoscope or zodiac rather than searching for astrologer. I mean, one of the things that you showed is that the term astrologer was incredibly low in the number of like the search volume compared to things like zodiac or horoscope.
Yeah. And actually what's interesting, if you see the graph that I posted in that section, there's a giant spike on all of the levels, like on all these different searches for astrology related terms. There was a big spike in January 2011. And I believe that was when the Ophiuchus controversy first came out. I think that was January 2011. So that's the spike just represented a spike in searches about an article that was critical of astrology based on a faulty premise. But anyway, I was searching the individual signs. I was just kind of curious to see if there was like one sign that kind of stuck out. And I think it was Leo, you know, and of course they want to know about themselves, right? You know.
Sure.
So
our friend Nick Dagenvest is not listening to this episode.
Yeah. It was very slight. And there were some that weren't quite as into looking up the horoscopes, but it was kind of more or less equal. But yeah, Leo was the dominant one. But that was the general point. I just thought it was kind of annoying that that the people who are looking for astrological insight aren't looking for it in the right places. You know, astrologers are kind of ready to provide the services, and a lot of times astrologers are looking to support themselves with astrology, and there's just kind of a fundamental mismatch between the way they're searching and the way it's being advertised.
It becomes like a feedback loop as well, because then if people are using those search terms, they're going to end up with, most of the time, not all of the time, and there are respectable horoscope column writers.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Astrologers that write horoscope columns and therefore would draw in some of that traffic. But then sometimes also you end up with not very good astrology sites like astrology.com, for example, which is like generally not regarded as like a bastion of highly intellectual, like advanced astrology things most of the time. But instead it's more of like a, company, a website owned by a huge corporation that's just looking to, to figure out how much money they can make from that domain, and generally not hosting very good astrology, where you have other websites, like amazing websites that have really good resources and try to provide a genuine service to the astrological community, like AstroDienst. But how many general consumers will just get on Google and search for AstroDienst as their primary search term? I'm guessing not very many.
Right. There is some good news, which is that astrologers might be able to use this information. Maybe they should be thinking of more ways to cater to the search term horoscope while like cramming in everything they can around it to kind of advertise the fact that they can get a value added service beyond.
So try to think about what keywords you're using. Perhaps you could, if one were to start a podcast, for example, perhaps you could call it something like the, let's say, astrology podcast, just hypothetically, if you're trying to target certain search terms, or if you wanted to write a political blog, maybe you could call it the political astrology blog, perhaps.
Right.
I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah, you definitely cornered that big time. So
this secret's out.
So SEO, I guess, is going to be good for anyone who's doing business online. But yeah, I just thought it kind of sucked that people who want astrology are not necessarily searching for it in the way that they could get it.
All right. Well, that's good for number 8. So number 7. What is number 7?
Highly religious people think you're the devil. I guess I'm talking more specifically about my main frame of reference for religious opponents of astrology have been American conservative Christians. I know that this will be really interesting to have heard. I can't wait to hear your the second part of your talk with Sam about religion and astrology, because I know that other religious traditions have different attitudes towards it. But my main experience has been with conservative Christians who think that, you know, it's Satan worship or something. There's a reference in Deuteronomy to astrologers being an abomination to the Lord, and there's a reference in Isaiah that says astrologers will be burnt like stubble. And I guess my reaction to that is that there are countless references to astrology all throughout the Bible, and there's even a quote directly from Jesus, Luke 21:25, where he says there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. He's talking about the end of the world or something. I forget the exact context of that passage, but it seems like a fairly clear endorsement of astrology. I mean, that's essentially in a nutshell what we're talking about. We're talking about signs in the sun and the moon and stars. He may be talking about the wandering stars, which are the planets, you know, if it's coming from the Greek.
Astrology has always had this sort of complicated relationship with Christianity, where one of the things I talked about a little bit in the episode with Sam in the last episode was just that initially astrology almost seemed like it was being used in order to endorse or to validate the new religion. And you have, you know, the story of the three the wise men in the Gospel of Matthew following a star and having it basically lead them to the birth of the Messiah, and that was kind of seen as that story has an important sort of literary role in basically confirming that, you know, somebody really important was born at that point in time, because that's what people were doing. And in the same time period, you have, for example, like Roman emperors publishing their birth charts publicly because of what astrologers said about the chart being very eminent. I think it was Augustus who published his chart publicly in order to legitimize his reign and legitimize his rule over the sort of newly created or in the process of being created empire.
Mm. The other thing I find kind of funny, I mean, this is sort of superficial, I suppose, but these people are, you know, against fortune tellers, and I guess they put astrologers in that category. And I mean, but what are prophets if not fortune tellers of a sort? I mean, the prophets were revered, but fortune tellers, now they're a problem. You know, if I just think that's it's sort of a weird contradiction.
Yeah, and I think there are. I mean, I remember I was researching cleromancy, which is the casting of lots, and it was a form of divination that was used in that time period. And that's where we get the concept of the lots or the Arabic parts in traditional astrology. And I was researching the term, and the term actually comes up in the Bible, because at one point it actually has them casting. It has like the apostles like casting lots in order to determine the outcome of some situation. They're basically doing divination at that point. So, and then, of course, when you search for that, you see like 20 articles from like apologists that are trying to explain how the apostles were not doing divination and how this was something else, sort of trying to explain it away. But you have you have this interesting just tension between Christianity and astrology, where at first it's being used, it's showing up sometimes occasionally, like in that passage in Luke, supposedly with the statement being attributed to Jesus, or with the story in Matthew about the wise men. And then later on, you have this apprehension about it because primarily, as far as I can tell, the primary issue that most of the early church fathers really argued about or argued against was the idea of predetermination and of fate, which was associated with astrology being something that was bad or that Christians were not subject to.
Right. Well, there's also, you know, mentions in all of the Synoptic Gospels about the sky darkening at the time that Jesus was crucified, which, I mean, I suppose you could just point to that as kind of a literary reference to make it seem more important, this cosmic event, you know, that there was a solar eclipse at the time, Jesus was killed. And, I mean, that is kind of astrological. That's, you know, I mean, if they're fine with that, it seems like that's another instance of astrology essentially being present. It's just this idea that this celestial event was significant for something that was happening on Earth that's at its essence kind of hermetic, you know, as above, so below.
The point that I think Sam and I came to, or certain, at least that I came to, was just, if you look back in history, you're going to find people from just about every major religion or denomination that have at some point either used astrology and talk about it favorably or have argued against astrology. And so you can usually find a literary or like textual source to support whatever side you want to take. But it is certainly something that astrologers are uniquely sort of have to deal with and put up with, which is not just arguments from skeptics and the scientific community, but we also get the not great sort of arguments sometimes coming from the religious communities as well, which is, I love this sort of twist when it comes from the religious community, because it's often not, you know, astrology doesn't work or something like that. They'll say, you know, astrology works, but it's just the work of the devil or of
it's evil
spirits or something like that.
It's, astrologers cannot catch a break.
Right.
We're either, you know, frauds and delusional and anti-science, or, you know, evil and satanic. It's great. So I guess it kind of moves us to the next one, I guess, which is that,
which is very related,
which is that, you know, astrologers tend to get lumped in with anything remotely occult or new age. And that's not necessarily too much of a problem, except that, I mean, astrology predates a lot of the things that it's now associated with. It's its own thing. I mean, the only two disciplines it's really sort of connected with in antiquity are alchemy and magic, but those are still distinct, separate disciplines.
Yeah, what else I had a really hard time with this, actually, when I first got into astrology and first started attending Kepler, because one of the first year you're dealing with history entirely, and in the last term, like the last several months of the first year, you focus on modern history from like the 19th and 20th century, basically. And they focused a lot on spiritualism and the development of the New Age movement. And one of the points that we had to debate, I remember doing a debate like 10 years ago, it was probably 2004, in the spring of 2004. And the topic was, is astrology a New Age discipline? And this is like a debate topic that Nick Campion had come up with. And I got put on the team that had to argue against that. And I was actually kind of pissed off about that, because I didn't actually agree with that point. I was very into that stuff at that point, and I considered astrology to be like a New Age discipline and very much connected with all of the other things sort of associated with that. And the only real angle that I had in trying to argue this case that I didn't really want to argue was the point that astrology predates the New Age movement and is much older and has always been sort of its own separate thing. And while sometimes astrology gets incorporated into other fields or other disciplines or other, let's say, occult topics like alchemy or magic or even medicine, many doctors used astrology during the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, or let's say weather forecasting or whatever. Like, astrology is its own thing sort of unto itself, even though it sometimes gets imported into or applied to other fields or other topics. And eventually, as I kind of like grew out of sort of being a sort of New Agey astrologer, that argument started to have more weight to me, and I started to understand it more as I studied older forms of astrology more and could see how astrology was conceptualized before it was being used by a lot of people recently in the New Age movement, where they would use a lot of terms and integrate a lot of terminology into it that can only be understood within the context of the New Age movement.
Right.
But if you sort of take it outside of that cultural context, then you sort of understand how it's this thing that's existed long before the past 100 years of the spiritualism and theosophy in the New Age movement. And in all reality, it's going to exist for a long time into the future,
beyond,
once the New Age movement is just some, you know,
something
thing
else
of the past,
right,
that was done in the 20th century, where you know, there were these people that sort of mixed together this hodgepodge of a lot of different metaphysical and other subjects into this sort of unique stew of sorts.
Right. And one issue I kind of pointed out in the article is that one thing that comes up if you lump all these practices together is that there's the possibility for, if you're associating different disciplines as just kind of being all part of the same thing, that, I mean, in some cases they have very different premises. So I kind of use the example that the implicit premise of astrology is that lives are fated to some degree because transits are predictable, they're fixed. And I know that obviously people are going to have a lot of different ideas about whether we have, you know, free will or fate. But I mean, if astrology is supposed to provide any kind of reliable information, that there is some, it's more deterministic than not. I mean, there has to be some degree to which people are accepting that astrology is providing useful information because transits are fixed, because there is some element of fate at work here. You know, and if we're just going to say that it's the same thing as magic, if you're going to do magic as well, implicit in the practice of magic or other kind of magical thinking like the law of attraction, you know, is a premise that your life is affected by your will and your intentions. And that's kind of the opposite of astrology, which is that everything, you know, or that things might be more fated. And maybe those aren't totally irreconcilable. I'm sure there are going to be many people who may have a lot to say about that, but it seems like it would be hard to hold these contradicting premises together holding astrology and magic to be kind of these equivalent fields, because even in, you know, the three Hermetic disciplines, they are considered to be separate. They're not just the same thing. You know, astrologers aren't Harry Potter.
Yeah, the biggest underlying thing in terms of the perception. So there's the perception that it's either a cult or perception that it's a New Age thing. And one of the biggest points that I have as a response to that is just going back to this idea that astrology is neutral, and that it's like it doesn't have a specific, it doesn't imply a lot. There's a lot of implications about the universe. There are some certainly some big cosmological and philosophical and sort of metaphysical implications you could draw from it, but it also has some pretty strong lines as well. And people often will project a lot of different things onto astrology in terms of what their spiritual beliefs are, what their religious beliefs are, or philosophical beliefs, even what their, you know, political beliefs are, or what their beliefs about culture or politics or like the economy and other stuff like that. I recently attended a lecture, honestly, not a very good lecture, by somebody that was very into not just New Age stuff, but also like political conspiracies. Like, it was hardcore into, you know, David Icke and like,
oh dear,
who's the other guy? Alex Jones and stuff like that. And he was basically filtering, like, everything he said about astrology was just being filtered through this lens of, you know, everything he'd ever heard from, everything he'd ever heard from like David Icke or Alex Jones or other conspiracy theorists that he'd like read about on the internet. And that was like his viewpoint. And he seemed to be using astrology to justify some of his beliefs, but it wasn't necessarily that the astrology itself was particularly like affirming of those beliefs. He was just kind of using them in tandem with it or to sort of justify it. And I often think that's the case, so that, yeah, when astrology does get lumped in with, you know, the occult or the New Age or whatever other label that people want to apply to it, you can oftentimes just as easily point out ways in which you could give it a completely different and opposite label pretty easily. I mean, one of them that's kind of interesting, and it's been interesting for me recognizing this over the past year, is that, you know, astrology is often practiced because of the New Age association. It often gets practiced by, let's say North America or in the United States, by liberals. But there's actually a lot of like conservative astrologers that practice astrology as well, much to people's surprise, which is just, and I only bring that up because it's interesting because sometimes a person can go into something like that assuming that their belief or their way of perceiving the world is the only way that you could practice this subject,
right?
Or that you couldn't practice it if you didn't hold that belief.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I mean, as a liberal, it actually comforts me in some ways that there are conservative astrologers out there, because it reinforces the notion that it can be neutral, that it can be something that's, its validity can be recognized regardless of your political affiliation or political beliefs, that it just is.
Sure. And that it's had a long enough history that it has been practiced by virtually
right.
any.
It transcends, politics, definitely.
Sure. So that's a good sort of response in some sense to that as an annoyance, even though, so despite that, and despite us having that sort of extended digression about that, that's going to be one of the things that's going to be annoying, is that you will get lumped into as an astrologer and automatically classified with certain things by certain people just because of what their perception is, or what the public perception of astrology is. And either a cult or New Age are two pretty common ways of classifying astrology.
Definitely.
All right. So on to point five.
So astrological predictions are held to higher scrutiny than other predictions. And it's pretty annoying. I mean, weatherman makes a bad call on the weather. Field of meteorology is just fine. And when a political scientist makes a bad call on an election, you know, they're not thrown off TV. You know, they're not barred from publishing or anything. They just, you know, life goes on. If an economist, you know, doesn't make good predictions on the state of the economy, they're not totally disgraced. I mean, it no one studies economics anymore. But it seems like when an astrologer makes a bad call, that for some people that's enough. It's, you know, that's I mean, I feel like in some ways it's, some skeptics like to say about astrologers that they only count the hits and they don't count the misses. Well, I feel like in some ways they do the opposite, where they only count the misses. You know, and one miss is it.
Sure.
You know, and sometimes these experiments, and I say use that term loosely just because of how poorly these experiments are designed. You know, even Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, has talked about how, if you give a text of a sort of sample horoscope, that everyone will project their own personality to match it. And, I feel like that's not testing astrology. That's not testing the astrological phenomenon. That's testing people's, you know, desire to see what they want to see. But that isn't measuring anything about astrology. But it's used, but, you know, even someone like him, you know, uses that as like a sort of go-to, you know, one, you know, KO blow to astrology, you know, but it has nothing to do with astrology. So yeah, I feel like they only count the misses, and the misses are definitely held up above, you know, any other kinds of evidence. So one miss is enough for them to, you know, discredit the field entirely.
Sure. Sure. Whereas in other fields like economics or political science, or I'm trying to think of other fields that just involve sort of different types of forecasting or making attempts to make prediction based on data that may or may not work because of the number of variables involved and things that you can take into account and can try to anticipate in terms of the upcoming trends and where things seem to be headed versus variables and other things that you can't take into account or can't see, and therefore don't get factored into your equation. And just the level of emphasis that you give to a single prediction or a single attempt to make a forecast based on something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a valid criticism. I mean, on the other hand, and just to play devil's advocate, mm-hmm. there's certainly in the astrological community we do not have a great track record for using the sort of modern empirical process in order to track predictions and then record outcomes in a very regular and strict fashion or in a controlled fashion. I don't think that happens a lot, or it happens enough, despite this being a sort of valid criticism.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I mean, I don't think that it should, it shouldn't, it doesn't discredit the entire field of astrology, but I do agree that we could definitely do a better job of keeping track of predictions and try to kind of more empirically test certain predictive methods. You know, there's plenty of things to predict about. I mean, you know, sports would probably be a pretty good way to test out a lot of predictions, or at least concerning competitions. A lot of predictions obviously don't focus on, you know, like a simple thing like if someone wins or loses. You know, there's a whole sort of host of range of topics that people can predict about that don't necessarily have, you know, quantifiable components.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, using sort of simple tests with not very many variables would probably be the best route.
Definitely.
Whereas that's one of the problems when people do start making predictions about such large scale events is that there's often so many variables involved that unfortunately, and I mean, one of my observations is one of the things that I often cringe about when it comes to like the public perception of astrology and the way that astrologers are influencing that is that oftentimes for some reason, the types of people that are drawn to mundane astrology for some reason tend to be people that feel comfortable sometimes making very like wild statements about things that are coming up in the future. And I think that can sometimes be where the astrological community gets some of that reputation is mm-hmm. from, you know, people making wild predictions about like, you know, the economy tanking or major disasters taking place in the future or something like that. And sometimes right. that comes from, it's like you have other groups outside of the astrological community that are sometimes using quasi-astrological things in order to come to those conclusions. Like, you know, like let's say apocalyptic, like Christian sects that are, you know, predicting the end of the world or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also get like the New Agers or like the 2012 thing or
yeah.
the Age of Aquarius people that of which there's still many in the astrological community that are like searching for, you know, when is the day that the Age of Aquarius begins,
right.
Which it's not that prevalent, but sometimes you will run into one of those people that's like convinced that they found like the day that the Age of Aquarius begins.
Right.
So yeah. Anyway, so that's, it's like a valid criticism and annoyance that all astrologers are going to have to deal with. But then at the same time, it's something also that we're not doing as well as we could perhaps. And part of that's due to just the Wild West sort of nature of the field, since it's a largely unregulated,
right.
Lacking in standards because of the lack of universal agreement about standardized testing within the astrological community. And thus you just get sort of different people at different levels all over the place making different types of predictions.
Right.
So anyway, so that's point number five. So point number four, I think, is one of your better ones in this list.
Everyone thinks that you have superpowers. You know, when it comes out that I, you know, practice astrology, you know, sometimes I've had people say, oh, tell me my future, you know, and I'm like, well, do you have your birth date, birth time, birthplace? Can I go get my computer? Like, you know, it's not like an immediate thing. And I said in the article that I imagine it's sort of like a comedian who's asked to, you know, hey, be funny, you know, and it's kind of, you know, it doesn't really work like that. And, astrology, I think astrology is something that anyone can learn. It doesn't take like a special intuitive sense. It doesn't take like it's not a superpower. It's literally learning a language and translating it into the language that you speak. So for us, it's English. It's interpreting. And that's why, you know, Mercury has always been kind of a symbol for astrology and astrologers, you know, the interpreters of these messages from the cosmos. And, You know, I think even a hardcore skeptic of astrology, if they were able to learn the basic fundamentals of astrology, they could be reading charts after a while. Like, it doesn't, it's not like some magical like power or superpower that you have. It's a field of knowledge which you can, that anyone can learn about and get proficient in. I'm not saying sure. I'm not saying that like it's easy to be an astrologer, but I'm saying that it's not like you know, it's not like you're a Krypton or something, you know.
Sure, it's a technical discipline,
right?
Rather than some being like an inborn trait, like being a psychic or something like that.
Right. Yeah, and that's sort of a point I make, which is that, you know, I mean, a psychic and an astrologer do very different things. I mean, a psychic presumably could tell you the, you know, the numbers of the lottery ticket that will win you millions of dollars. And whereas the astrologer might just be able to tell that maybe you'll have financial luck, you know, in a certain period. And, you know, that's, those are pretty different things. You know, astrologers are not psychics and they don't have superpowers. It just doesn't work like that. So I think the perception is from people who think that astrologers, well, they know the future. Well, sort of, you know, it doesn't really work quite like that.
The presumption is that astrology is like a crystal ball that allows you to literally glimpse into the future as if you're looking at like a movie of what somebody's going to be doing 20 years from now, when instead what you're doing is you're looking at like a set of sort of symbols and almost like graphs which give you trends and themes that will be coming up at different points in a mm-hmm. person's life. And from that, you're inferring possible scenarios about potential outcomes that will take place in the future based on the number of variables that you're able to take into account at that point in time and based on your understanding of the person's trajectory at that point.
Now, I'm not saying that necessarily a computer could replace an astrologer. I mean, I don't know. Maybe if we had super advanced AI that was able to make the same kinds of connections that humans can make. Or I don't know if you could make like a, you know, an astrology robot. I'm not sure if it could be quite like that, but it's definitely not a superpower.
And this is problematic because this sort of misunderstanding or misconception by the public can often lead to mistaken assumptions about what astrologers can do and should be able to do, which becomes problematic for practicing astrologers in terms of people approaching you and assuming that you can tell them certain things that are sort of outside of your ability to do.
Yeah, I'm a Libra. Tell me about me. Go away.
Well, or I mean the example you used in terms of, you know, tell me what my lucky numbers will be, or I mean even things about, I mean there's certain things, and maybe this is arguable, but like when will I meet the love of my life, for example, even that sort of starts bordering on problematic, just because while astrologer might have certain tools for identifying things like when will an important relationship happen in a person's life, or when will, I mean, in some techniques like with zodiac releasing, sometimes you can even get as close as, let's say, maybe sometimes when will one of the most important relationships of my life take place. It's still not quite to the level. There's almost, I think everyone's process when they start learning astrology is at first probably, I think for many people, having to go through a period of almost disappointment and readjustment once they realize how their perception, how their assumptions about astrology are different from what it's actually capable of doing, and then adjusting to, you know, what it can actually do. But then once you get over that initial period, you're left with realizing that it can still do some really amazing things, and you just want to learn more about it and take it as far as it can go and sort of push it to its limits to see just what it is actually capable of. But there's still sometimes, I think for some people, because of the public perception about what it should be able to do, or what, you know, astrologers do in movies or in novels or something, what it can actually do.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. That's kind of the inverse of the next point in some ways. And the point number three is the crushing burden of knowledge. That's another problem that's just the worst.
The burden of foreknowledge?
The burden of foreknowledge. It's knowing from astrology that there are things that you can't change. And it can be hard when it's your own life, you know, that you see, you know, if you've always wanted to be rich and you can see sort of clearly from your chart that that's not really promised to you. You know, if you have malefics in your 11th or 2nd, or you have, you know, poor rulers, you know, situated there, you can see that there's like financial loss in your chart, then, you know, that's, you just have to deal with that. And if you take it seriously, that that's what it means, then, you know, you have to deal with that. And I think it's almost worse when it's with someone else, when it's someone else who has so much hope for something, and you're suddenly in the position of having to give them, you know, adverse news about like what the chart seems to suggest, and that it doesn't necessarily support the desire that they have. I think, Chris, you told me about a client you had once who they were wondering if they were going to be in a long-term relationship again, and you were looking on the Zodiac releasing from arrows, and you couldn't actually see anything coming up.
Well,
do you remember
that?
Yeah,
I run into this issue pretty commonly, and I think this is an issue that's more relevant to just traditional astrologers at this point for the most part. I mean, some modern astrologers might occasionally deal with sort of some general outlines of this theme, but it's really more of an issue that's coming up with the resurgence, the revival of more predictive forms of older forms of astrology, essentially, at this point, that were more designed for, but also more capable of making concrete statements about a person's life. One of the drawbacks that you run into when you start using that and you see that it works and that it's effective, it's often kind of startlingly effective at how good it can be sometimes in saying certain things or giving you certain outlines about a person's life. One of the issues that you run into, both in your own chart, but also sometimes with clients, is just what happens when there's a part of the person's chart that's not working out very well, or just looks like it's not going to be an area of their life that's going to go very smoothly. Since every person who lives is going to have some part of their life that just does not go as smoothly as other parts of their life. And that can vary to different extremes. I mean, some people can experience extremes of great tragedy in certain parts of their life, while other people might just experience that as an area of setbacks, or of not feeling as fulfilled as they would like in some area or what have you. But how do you deal with that when you have what essentially constitutes foreknowledge of a certain area of a person's life when it's bad news? And how do you deal with that with a person? And honestly, I've been seriously wrestling with that issue for the past 10 years, but especially the past 5 years, as I've been doing astrology more intensely as a practicing astrologer and seeing more and more clients. And sometimes the only answer is just not to say anything. And that's my current sort of cop-out when it comes to that issue, is not necessarily oftentimes to
do no harm.
Yeah, because you don't want to you don't want to freak a person out. Right. You don't, there's not really any good reason to freak a person out or to sort of put that on a person's conscious. I've used the word conscious, a person's.
It's okay. It's okay. I, the judge of appropriate astrological terminology, do hereby deem the use of the word conscious to be within bounds.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well,
that's what we need, is somebody that's like a referee.
Yeah,
I
just need to be, yeah, that guy.
Okay.
I mean, in some ways, it reminds me of the characters in The Matrix. You know, you have that character Cypher who he regretted taking the red pill, because he doesn't like life outside of the Matrix, and he wishes he took the blue pill. And then he says, "Ignorance is bliss." And in so many ways, I think that kind of learning about astrology and kind of going down that rabbit hole is kind of like taking the red pill and starting to see the world in a way in which you didn't before, just as the characters in The Matrix see the world in terms of code, you know, whereas astrologers are seeing the world in terms of meaning. And so you start to see things that you wouldn't otherwise have known, and then that can be kind of distressing, you know, if this part of your life you thought you, you know, would go well and you don't necessarily see it happening. The other aspect of the crushing burden of knowledge is when you see things, you see other things that you're not actually supposed to know about. So I knew this woman who was married, and she wanted me to read her chart, like with her husband. And there are a few things I was seeing in her chart, but one of the more sort of startling things I was thinking about was she was having Neptune opposing her Venus, and sort of this long-term transit. And I knew that the transit like started a long time after they had already gotten married, and there were a few other things in her zodiac releasing from arrows and order of the seventh and everything. It just kind of made me kind of realize that, you know, that transit wasn't about her husband. You know, it wasn't about her current marriage. It was about another relationship. It was about a relationship outside of her marriage, and that did kind of turn out to be the case. But she was like pressing me for like all this information, and I didn't really know what to say because, you know, it was something I was not supposed to know about. I couldn't just blurt that out in front of like her husband and stuff. Like that'd be way too real. But yeah, it's sort of a burden, you know, kind of knowing these things that you're not supposed to know about. You see certain configurations coming to pass with like your friends or family, and kind of having an idea of what's happening and just not really having a way to change it. That's kind of a burden of knowledge. Right. But I'd rather know. I'd still take the red pill. But I don't know if you've ever felt like that.
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, does the question, I guess, is just does knowing the potential outcome of something cheapen or lessen the experience of living it? That process of actually learn, that's actually a process I feel like that especially predictive astrologers, but perhaps astrologers to a lesser extent in general, have to learn as like a life process that you wouldn't otherwise anticipate or expect, or that otherwise like normal people don't have to deal with, which is, you know, learning how to live and still enjoy things and enjoy the moment and the process, even if sometimes there's the potential of knowing that the outcome might not be what you want or what might be ideal for you in terms of your own personal desires in terms of the outcome of things.
That leads directly into my second to last point, which is one problem is that you feel like you have free will, even if you're not sure you have it. And by that I mean, you know, in everyday life, I think we experience freedom. We experience free choices. There are any number of innumerable number of choices we make in a given day that, you know, are ostensibly free, you know, but they seem to be wrapped up in sometimes the details can influence bigger events in your life that we would say are kind of under the domain of astrology. But it kind of throws into question how much of your life is actually fated. And then if that's true, how do you just live in the moment? How do you live with this very convincing real-time illusion of free will, even when you know in the back of your mind that it might not be so, that it might be fated instead?
And right.
The only way I've kind of been able to deal with that is just, one, being thankful that that is how I experience time, and that the illusion is as convincing as it is. And basically, I came to the conclusion that I have to live like I have free will, even if I have none. And I think I actually got that originally from Nick.
Yeah, that's something I've said for a while. I think I actually said it on the very last episode where I was talking to Mark Jones about fate and free will. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues as well is that one of the things I've observed sometimes, and I'm not sure how widespread this is, but I think sometimes newer astrologers, especially for the first few years of their astrological studies, will go through this kind of obsessive phase of really obsessing over their charts and obsessing over their transits and progressions and other timing techniques, and doing that for themselves, but then also doing that for like everybody around them. And getting really like intense into it in terms of following everything and focusing on it and sometimes being concerned about certain things that are coming up or apprehensive, other times being, you know, looking forward to or being elated about certain transits. And it's like this really intense thing. But then sometimes at some point for, I think, a lot of people, there's like a cool down phase where mm-hmm. you're maybe not doing that as much as you did when you first got into it. And at some point you either realize you have to draw a line, or at least you start stepping back from it a little bit. And once you've done it for long enough, you kind of realize that you don't need to obsess about it as much as you might otherwise.
Definitely. I've definitely experienced that. I've had kind of an on and off, you know, relationship with astrology in some ways that definitely charts my experience with it. What you just said, right now I'm in a more of a jacked in phase, but I'm not nowhere near as kind of obsessive about like knowing where everything is at every moment, you know, and I'm learning to kind of just like let go. And I know that I have like bad trends coming up, and I know I have good ones coming up too. And I just don't stress about it now. You know, like it's all going to come regardless. Like I'm just going to take it for what it is. It's what I'd have to do anyway. So,
yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that might ultimately, there's some level, and I've seen this sometimes with certain older astrologers, like just observing the way that like Demetra George or like Rob Hand talks about their chart or thinks about their transits or something like that. It's funny to me if one of the greatest, it's possible, I'm not fully sure if I'm there yet, but one of the greatest ironies and lessons of astrology ultimately ends up being that you don't need it, or that you know, it's not necessary to live one's life, that ultimately, even if you know everything about the astrology and you're like a master astrologer and you've achieved astrological enlightenment, you know, you still have to live your life, and everything is still largely the same in terms of having to do the same things and make the same choices and decisions and having many of the same outcomes in many instances. So that, yeah, I mean, it would be interesting, and I'm not fully there yet. I'm not sure if I'm fully there yet, but I've considered it as one of the possible, like, you know, final levels of astrology in terms of one's understanding of the subject.
Well, isn't it amazing how, you know, astrologers, you know, obsess about like getting like the perfect marriage chart, or even trying to elect, you know, the births of their own children, or, you know, electing the times they want to start a business, and, you know, the people who have successful businesses have amazing business inceptional charts for their businesses without astrology. I mean, you know, some of the best inceptional charts are done without astrology, without astrological knowledge. They just happen that way. I mean, it's ironic. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of that though comes down to, you know, what is your personal philosophy of astrology? And if you've already adopted, you know, a more deterministic philosophy of astrology, then you're going to tend in that direction. Whereas somebody that's more free will oriented and maybe puts more emphasis on having choices and that their choices could alter their trajectory or alter their the outcome of certain things that they initiate at different points in their life, would put more emphasis and would continue potentially to, I don't know, I don't want to say obsess more, but, you know, certainly for important decisions, take astrological considerations into account on an ongoing basis. So some of that boils down to this question that came up in the last episode, I think, with Mark Jones, and that was raised afterwards in sort of discussions about that episode, where one of the listeners of the show, Paul Kiernan, pointed out just the importance of sort of thinking about what one's personal philosophy is and how that affects one's astrological practice. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm unclear about, you know, sometimes it's unclear how much it's one's philosophy dictating how they're using the astrology, or one's experience of astrology and what they see happening in charts and see happening when they attempt to elect things or ask horary questions or what have you, that actually influencing their philosophy and their philosophy being predicated on their experience with astrology. sometimes it goes both ways, or sometimes it goes more one way or another with different astrologers.
Mm-hmm. I guess the only other thing I'd have to add is, you know, even if people do believe in free will, I mean, there are things that happen that are outside of your control. I mean, and ultimately the only way to deal with these sort of unknown factors is kind of a stoic acceptance. And you know, living with astrology is being more of a deterministic kind of thing. It makes you kind of adopt that attitude towards a lot of things. I mean, you just have to kind of chill out. Like, you do have to just kind of accept, you know, the good and the bad and everything in it. But that's kind of what people would have to do, even if they believe they have free choices. With some things, there are some things you just don't have control over. So,
sure. Yeah. And I mean, that was always the classical primary philosophical statement that every ancient astrologer said, regardless of what their other philosophical background was, is they all said the purpose of astrology ultimately, or the primary purpose was of foreknowledge, was to know about things ahead of time so that you could prepare yourself internally, sort of psychologically or spiritually, for whatever is coming up, so that you'd be not completely unfazed by it, but perhaps less caught off guard and less knocked off of your chair, let's say, regardless of whether it's an extremely negative event or an extremely positive event, but instead you achieve this internal sense of equilibrium and the ability to handle anything.
Right. I definitely feeling that.
And I mean, that's also relevant even in election astrology, because one of the things that people don't think about, people often put this emphasis on like a free will component of election astrology, but they fail to recognize this other element to election astrology that's really important, which is sort of locking in your choice and locking in your fate in some sense once you've initiated the action. And once you've taken that step and made the choice that you're agreeing to, and you're sort of accepting certain outcomes as a result of that. And that was sort of potentially part of the broader philosophical idea that was built into that concept in the ancient world, in the Hellenistic period, where the Neoplatonists had this concept of conditional fate, that you had a choice to make decisions and the ability to freely make certain choices. But once you make the choice, the outcome itself is predetermined in some sense.
Well, and that may be because there's an inception chart of the inception chart. You know, I mean, the time that you make the inception, the time that you decide on the time that you're going to do something might also be, you know, an operative chart, which is funny because then there's even the movie Inception, where there's the dream within a dream. So it's literally an inception of an inception inception.
Right. And you know, the inception, I mean, your birth itself is an inception, and that's a sort of chart in and of itself that, you know, at least theoretically guarantees certain outcomes. But then that question of to what extent is, I guess, open for interpretation as well.
Right. Well,
so,
you know, that was number two. So even having these sort of existential crises that bring you to the point of insanity, like, even that isn't the worst thing.
Right. It's funny that you didn't end with one of those.
Yeah, I didn't actually end with that, because while it's huge, it just is like this really mundane thing that is just kind of insane.
The issue of fate and free will literally pales in comparison to this next point.
To procuring birth times. I feel like that's just the number one problem, because they are the crux of all detailed astrological study. You know, having accurate birth times is literally like the lifeblood of the study of astrology. I mean, obviously there's still a lot you can do without a birth time, but you know, to really get into the nitty gritty, you really need to have that piece of information, and it's just impossible sometimes to get a hold of. And you know, we've done a whole podcast on this one topic before, because it's such a necessary piece of information, but it can just be like almost comically, like stupidly difficult to get. And there's just no guarantees in the area of birth time acquisition. I've had to come up with like all these like weird ways of like asking people when I want to find out their birth time. I've with some friends where I didn't really want to come out and tell them that I was into astrology because I wasn't sure what they felt about it, but I really wanted to know their birth time. I'd sometimes kind of broach the topic by somehow introducing the topic of like parents talking about parents. And so if I got them talking about their parents, then I could tell them the story about how my parents met in a bar and like my dad went home with my mom that night. And then they're like, oh, that's a crazy story. And I'm like, oh yeah. So how'd your parents meet? And
they're like, starting to back away from you slowly.
Right. I think I've been able to do it smoothly. But you bring up the topic of parents, you bring up how they met, and then you kind of steer that to how you came about. And then I'll say just kind of like in an offhanded way, like, oh yes, I was born on October 23rd, 1987 at 1:06 a.m., and so then when they're telling their, when they were born, I say, oh, what day? And I say, oh, what time? I say, or I'll say like, oh yeah, what time, like that's a really important piece of information. Ha ha ha. Actually, in my head, I'm saying, no, really, really, I really hope you answer this. I really want to know your birth time. If you don't do this, the last 20 minutes that we've been talking about this is totally for nothing. And I mean, it's kind of that's something a crazy person does. Like, that's not anything a normal person does. But, I've been reduced to this because it's just not something that you can easily bring up. I mean, John Stewart, when he was asked by, one of the members in his audience what his birth time was, obviously some astrology enthusiasts in the audience, he acted like it was the strangest question he's ever been asked. I mean, and he's right. That's a weird question. What time did you exit your mother's vagina? Well, yeah, let me just think, what was it? Like, it's a weird piece of information, and there just aren't many easy ways. Because even if you ask someone, even if you go through this entire, spiel, to get to this point where they may willingly volunteer this information, they may not know it. They may just not know it. Or they'll ask their parents and they'll be like, oh, I think they just said 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. And then it's hard to kind of go more specific then, because if you do, then, if you're like, well, was it a.m. or p.m.? And then they're going to be like, well, where the fuck do you want to know? What, what's it to you? And you're like, trust me, I need to know this. It makes you look like a crazy person and you're just trying to find out something really, really simple.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all, again, it just comes back to this theme we keep coming back to of the public perception of astrology, and that unfortunately, the public perception of astrology is such, and it's hard to anticipate how any individual is going to react to a question like that, and the perception of astrology is such that it creates a sort of stigma surrounding it, or at least it can for certain people, for all of the reasons that we just listed, whether a person has religious misconceptions about astrology, whether a person has, skeptical or scientific preconceptions or misconceptions about astrology, whether a person only knows about sun signs and just thinks it's dumb, or just thinks it's something for shallow magazines or tabloids or something like that. There's any number of reasons where sort of outing yourself as an astrologer is something that's socially risky. And so even though the way that this being phrased is kind of humorous and could come off as a little like creepy in some ways, because you're kind of doing it in a subtle or kind of sneaky way, the reason for that is actually more of the social stigma.
It's
and
not
potential.
Me. It's the system. It's society. Right. Yeah, because
if astrologers had it, everybody upon first meeting would just hand each other birth charts and and it would all be very cordial and very...
I mean, ideally, it would just be, like a matter of public record. Like if you wanted to look up, if you should just be like a, you know, an online database, or even something where you had to just kind of go in and look it up, like you'd go up to the, you know, go to the library and look something up. But I feel like if the society was aware of like the reason why people kind of wanted that information, then it would probably be even more restrictive.
I mean, one of the issues is that's come up recently in just the past few years with like the internet, for example, is just like privacy issues. Mm-hmm. And that is like a question, I think maybe we have touched upon this already before. I mean, maybe our listeners would be rolling their eyes because we already touched upon it, but just that question where if astrology was more open and there were more discussions about it or something like that, perhaps discussions about privacy and about, you know, if a person wants their birth data public, whether that should be respected or not. I know Astro Data Bank has kind of an unwritten policy of if somebody, I think, asks for their birth data not to be listed, that I think they recognize that. Whereas that's not like a rule that's universally held in the astrological community. But, you know, there's certainly debates that could be had for the pros and cons of something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say that it's kind of unfortunate that, it's been people like Donald Trump and sort of the birther movement, you know, who've been advocating for these laws where presidential candidates have to, you know, give up their birth certificates. And I've just been kind of conflicted about it because that would be an absolute godsend for astrologers to have, you know, the birth certificate information like readily available just as a matter of course, but it also means supporting a sort of unsavory kind of nativist sort of xenophobic kind of movement, you know, to because it was all rooted in these suspicions about Obama's birthplace and whatnot. So that's another kind of sucks, you know. You have to, you kind of, you have strange bedfellows, you know, when it comes to birth times. But it is just such an important thing for astrologers to have access to that. Yeah, just it's. I think that's definitely like a number one problem because I mean that technically having birth times more available would even be useful for skeptics because if we were really going to, you know, continue to do experiments like or statistical studies like the ones that Gaukeland did, that you'd need to have like raw data. I mean, and so even for the purposes of skeptics, like it would be important to have more data available to be able to validate or invalidate various astrological claims.
Right. And I mean, what's funny and kind of ironic about that is that with skeptics themselves, and when you're trying to look at birth data for like prominent skeptics, you often have to worry about whether the data that's given is correct because right. Like James Randi has said, I think in the past that he's put out false birth times to astrologers when they ask him as a sort of test so that if anybody ever gets the correct one or somehow figures it out, like he'll know they figured it out somehow else or it's sort of a test. So this has come up recently with a couple other skeptics and one prominent astrologer skeptic from I think the 1970s and 80s actually did deliberately give astrologers false times for years until somebody got a hold of his birth certificate and found out that the actual time of birth was like completely different than what he'd been giving out.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of annoying. It's like, you know, it's like telling a wrestler or something like they can only fight with one hand, you know. it's not very fair. I mean, you know, that piece of information is just something you'd need. It would be like, you know, giving a student a really crazily difficult math problem and then not allowing them to use a calculator or something for it. You know, this is just something we need. It's just something we need. And
sure. And then
it's just the impossible piece of information to get a hold of, you know, unless you're lucky, you know, and the person was born in a place where it is available. And that is a small number of places, but you know, that's just what it is. Those are the top 10 problems astrologers have that are just the worst, in my estimation.
All right. Well, I think many people would agree with you. And like I said, I think this struck a chord with a lot of astrologers just because of the shared experience of like what it's like to do this crazy thing that so many of us are into and what kind of weird side issues come up that you would never anticipate when you're first getting into it, but that suddenly become like major weird annoying life issues that you're like up at 3 o'clock in the morning like thinking about, like what is Donald Trump's birth time or something like that.
How else can I innocently convince people into willingly giving up their birth time information?
Right.
This is what we've been reduced to. This is
this is what astrology turns you into. So this is like a warning to the kids. So it should be like an advertising campaign someday. It'll be astrology, not even once. And they'll just be like pictures of you like scrounging through birth records, with, you know, kind of shriveled up and hunched over them.
Oh, Lord. Well,
so yeah. The final point is just the public perception of astrology. I think that's one of the big issues that comes up. I mean, some of these were just annoying things in general, but some of it seemed like with at least half of them were sort of how the public perceives and misperceives astrology as being one of the biggest hassles and downsides of having this as something that you're passionate about or that you pursue in your life.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this show then. So you're doing consultations now, and that's something that you've really been doing a lot more of for the past while, right?
Yeah. I am available for natal consultations and horary questions. And you can find more information about that at my site, www.patrickwatsonastrologer.com. And you should also join. You should also like my Facebook page. I will sometimes post little nuggets there as well as on my Twitter at @pwatsonastro. I have a new article coming out this week called 10 Times Astrology Was So Literal You Couldn't Even. So I hope you enjoy that. That will be it'll either have just come out by the time you hear this or it will be about to.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I would definitely recommend everybody check out your website at patrickwatsonastrologer.com. And thanks for joining me tonight.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.